When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 373 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Hello.
And we also have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Going good. So as usual, we'll start with fact check. And last time we were talking a while ago was that we were talking about the double tap feature on the Ultra, I guess it was, right? I had caught in the video that the man had mentioned that it uses minute wrist motions, and you guys both harped up that said that it uses accelerator and gyroscope, which is correct. It does use the accelerated gyroscope and optical heart sensor detecting minute wrist movements and movement. And I'm still using it. I still be using the haptic touch. Which is fine. And speaking of which, I got to charge my watch because it's down to 18%. Yeah, I used to have to touch all the time to save me having to, you know, reach in. I'm not really wearing gloves. I'm just starting wearing gloves now, but I'm sure in the wintertime it'll come in super handy. And when haptic touch doesn't work, I use my nose. So for those of you driving at home. All right.
Gloves. Oh, yeah. You live in a cold place.
Yeah. You don't have to take your gloves off and your scarf off and your mask off when you're in California, Mark?
When I go skiing, I do.
Where do you go skiing in California?
Lake Tahoe.
Oh, okay, cool. Nice. All right. So it's a kind of an old story, but I thought it was kind of interesting because it's kind of, as Greg used to say on our show, everything eventually becomes follow-up. I'm still fascinated with the original Apple Watch made of gold, right? The $17,000 gold model. As of like October 3rd, it is no longer available to be repaired. So it's now officially obsolete. So, yeah. And also the 2017 MacBook Pro Touch Bar is also now officially obsolete. Apple will not repair those anymore. So
I wonder if there's a third party service that will replace the guts with something more modern.
In the $17,000 gold watch?
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
yeah, I don't know.
Why would you want to you don't want to throw away your $17,000 gold watch?
Why would you throw away $17,000 on a gold watch?
Well, that's a different story. But you know, but assuming that you had already bought it, what are you going to do with it now? You can still wear it around, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know. I no offense to people who have lots of money, or maybe. I think that people who buy a $17,000 gold watch probably wear it once and then forget it and put it in a drawer and pick up their, you know, $50,000 whatever watch and put it on, right?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed really odd.
It would be shocked if anybody was still actually using the stock version of this because that's the original Apple Watch implementation was really painful and I can't recall how much you could upgrade software-wise, but they made some radical improvements really rapidly in this line. So if you were somehow still rocking a $17,000 gold watch, I'm going to guess it was just a fashion item as a bangle, and you may not even have charged it and turned it on.
Right? I want to say Watch OS 4 was the last. I have the OG watch. I never had the gold one, but I had the OG watch. And I recall, I think around 4, it was getting to be to the point where I couldn't upgrade it anymore. And that, I think that's about the time when I bought the next watch, right? And I wonder if the battery would even last. Because, I mean, I don't know if you remember, as far as I know, all of the watches are, the battery and everything, logic board is all sealed, right? And so it's not like you can even replace it. So it's an interesting business model for people, Mark, to replace the guts of a $17,000 gold watch.
Replace it with just a regular, everyday, non-smart watch, right? Just a face
with a winder on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Mickey Mouse hand.
Exactly.
On it,
so, yeah. Yeah.
That'd be cool. It's like, I don't know if you, when you were a kid, I don't know how old you would have to have been, Mark, but I had, remember the red, it was like a red, ruby red dial, and it had like the LED lights. It was like, I think it was like 75 or something.
Yeah, but the one I had wasn't a dial. It was just the red LEDs. Those are the first digital watches.
Little tiny light bulbs,
digital watches. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you remember, it didn't support leap years.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, because I think it came out in 75, and of course we have to fact check this, obviously in 76 it didn't do February 29th. That was the problem with it, right? So I had one of those back in the day. I wish I'd kept it, but I don't. I can probably just toss it or whatever. I can't remember what I did with it. Hmm. And Jaime, you had this story on Born Just Code. You want to run through it again?
It hadn't happened at that point. Now here it actually has, because I'm taking a look at my subscription. So Apple TV Plus and a whole bunch of other services. If you haven't noticed by now, they're more expensive. And there's new tiers, new tiered prices for Apple One. So I ended up switching to Apple One. It is now $19.95 per month US. Whereas the individual services would be, what did I add up to? $29? So Apple Music at $11, Apple TV Plus at $10. Apple Arcade at $7, and then $1 for the 50 gigs of iCloud storage.
So you're saying you switched to those because the One program was cheaper than buying them separately?
Yeah, in my head, I said, well, if I get Apple, I already had Apple Music, I've been watching Apple TV Plus, so that's 11 plus 10, that's $21. iCloud, you know, that's another buck, so $22. I'm already saving money there, and then Apple Arcade at $7 is essentially just a pack in for free.
Right.
So you're earning money every month on this.
that bank account keeps growing with all these savings.
Well, for those of you driving at home, I'm on the Premier Apple One, and it's $44.95 Canadian. I don't know if that feels like an increase, but I don't recall what I was paying before. So when did you think that when did it say the date was going to change? Do you know?
It just changed within the last week or so, I think. And plan-wise, you have the Premier. So individual at $19.95 a month, family at $25.95, and looks like Premier is $37.95. Does that match? Yeah, that matches what the article says. I'm looking at my phone to see what these are and the actual subscriptions.
I'll look at a notice from Apple about my last renewal. I'll carry on. I'll look at it later, but... Yeah, I have a feeling that's an increase too, but yeah, like I think it was going up like $4 or $5 for the Premier.
According to this article, the individual went up about $3, family went up $3, Premier went up $5.
Five, yeah. That's what I recall from Spotcast. Mm-hmm. Cool.
What do you get with Premier? Right. Do you get arcade and all that with Premier? You must.
Yeah. Which I never use. Yeah. I use news. Okay, in the wintertime I use fitness.
Oh, you get news. Okay.
I have a treadmill, news, and then music. I do it for the 2 terabytes of iCloud. That's the primary, because Carol and I share, like, long story short, we have the whole Apple ID thing, so we have shared resources, and it just makes more sense with the two phones, and we have like thousands and thousands of 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 pictures, and it adds up, and it takes up less space on our phone. Like, I mean, if I had all those pictures on my phone at the same time, that the memory usage would go up too. So. Which saves, so I pay in iCloud, but I save in having to get $100, $200 to get the next model up of phone. That doesn't make sense to me now that I think about it. Anyway, yeah, I have free backup in the sky, or not free, but I've paid backup in the sky. And what about Apple Arcade, honey?
Yeah, you know, I just mentioned that psychologically I felt like, well, I'm getting Apple Arcade for free now. Since I didn't buy...
With all the money you're saving, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't subscribe to Apple One specifically to get Apple Arcade. For me, it was like, well, I save a few bucks off of having already music, TV Plus and iCloud. But Apple Arcade is getting some newer games, so it continues to get things. I think the headliner here, as got here in the article, is definitely the Sonic Dream Team one. But I've got puzzle games like Not Words, Football Manager 2024. That is the soccer style of football for those of us in the U.S.
Hmm.
A game we've talked about before in the past, Downwell, and one that I think I gave up on way long ago because it was a freemium grinder of Puzzle and Dragon Story, one of those fancy pants match games. You match colors for things, you match gems, and then, you know, it had a whole sort of loot box mechanism, like, oh, I've got a dragon that's like three times more powerful because it's like a 1 in 100 chance of pulling this. I never finished that because I ended up hitting the freemium wall of like, I refuse to play 40 hours to get to the next level. You know,
right.
I don't want to pay $1, $10 or whatever it was to get to the next one. So I might actually turn this on and try it out and get past wherever I was in the story back in like 2015, 2017, I would guess.
So what's the name of the app?
Again? This game is Puzzle and Dragon's Story. It's very much like a Candy Crush or Columns, okay. That sort of match game.
And you get it. It's now included with Apple Arcade is what you're saying.
Yeah. And which means they had to have done something sensible to remove the freemium wall of like, oh, you get really far and then, oh, each one gets progressively, you know, asymptotically more difficult to get to the next level.
Yeah. I wonder what the advantage to the publishers is of putting their stuff on Arcade. I don't know. I don't understand the economics of it. Like, maybe did they get like a royalty for people using the app? I guess.
Maybe. Ooh, I forgot how they did that. I'm sure yeah, we talked about this on the show.
It's probably similar to the Apple Music model, where every time somebody uses it, you get some kind of cut. And it's probably based on length of time that you play the game, I would think. It would have to be, right? If it were based on number of plays rather than length of time, games would be really, really hard. And you'd lose a lot.
Yeah, they become quarter munchers if folks are
exactly.
Arcades, yep. Video arcades.
Yeah. Yep. I actually forgot that I have Arcade. I have the individual Apple One, but I completely forgot that I had Arcade. And to be honest, I'd much rather have News than Arcade bundled in, but that's not an option.
You don't have, because you don't have the right tier?
I don't have
Premier, individual. He personally doesn't make use of Apple Arcade, and he would love to be able to swap it of like, well, instead of Arcade, going to get News instead?
That's exactly what I was saying. Yep.
And then there's a whole bunch of people who are like, I don't want News. I want Arcade. And so flexibility and, you know, bring your own, build your own tier sort of thing.
Yeah, you should be able to pick three. That would be kind of nice.
Yeah. Do you all have Denny's in California? Not California, in Canada?
I think we have maybe one or two, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for those who don't know, Denny's, American diner, you know, predominantly known for its breakfast. So they have this thing called the Grand Slam, and they have a sort of pre-made set of Grand Slams of like, oh, this one has, you know, waffles with it. This one has every possible meat item. But you can also build your own slam. And I think what Mark wants, and I think I would probably want too, is like a build your own Apple One tier.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, just when you thought you were done working in UIKit, Apple has introduced a new feature here in the user loaf post. They've added View is Appearing just when you've gotten used to all the view hierarchy stuff. And what it is between, I think it's View Did Load, or sorry, View Will Appear and View Did Appear. This one is a place where you can do more things to your app. I don't know if you guys had a chance to review this, but this article.
Yeah, you know, I would have killed for this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. I mean, well, not literally killed, but yeah, this would have made my life so much easier. We used to go through jump through so many hoops to try to size things. And then there was the one time when they changed how all the sizing worked. Things would be sized when the view was loaded. So you could size things in View Did Load. Then they changed that. So all of a sudden nothing was sized in View Did Load. I mean, literally, you know, you upgraded your Xcode one day and everything stopped working. and that was related to when they who remembers this? When an interface builder, the templates stopped being phone shaped and just became squares.
Yeah, square.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly the generic size squares.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly when it happened.
They've reverted that too now. I just noticed I opened up an old view a while ago and it changed from a square to like a regular shape, right?
Oh, did it? It's so long since I've used Interface Builder now. I don't know.
Yeah, so this is cool because not only like it's an iOS 17 thing, but it actually is backported to iOS 13. So you don't, if you want to use it, you don't have to, like I said, if you're still doing UIKit, you don't have to wait for users to adopt 17. You can still use it. Most, I think a lot of people are using, most of the phones support iOS 13 these days, right? The shipping phones. Not the newer ones, obviously, but like the older ones that people are still sporting, you know?
Oh, I can't imagine that any phones that are still officially supported wouldn't support iOS. Oh, you're saying, you mean, has iOS 13?
Well, like I have an iPhone 6 in front of me. I have an iPhone 6 in front of me that can't go past 12, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but iPhone 6 is ancient history at this point. I know.
Like when we started the podcast. Yeah, cool. Anyway, Tim, interesting.
I did not even notice that particular statement. I read the article, but somehow I missed the this new method, the view is appearing, is back deployable to iOS 13. I think we've talked for a long time on this show that like it's normally like, hey, this new thing in Swift, guess what? It's not available in the previous version of iOS. You just use the new one. And I think they open that up a little bit. I think there's a few things that are making their way into, you know, current version minus one, but going all the way back from 17 to 13.
Yeah, that's a lot. Like,
people, that should be the headline here.
Right? Yeah.
Apple does this thing that's back deployable iOS 13. What the heck is it? Oh, view is appearing. That should arguably be the title. Have we seen anything that goes this far back from a developer facing quality of life thing? We've seen patches go back a little bit, you know, for security, but not.
That was pre-pandemic.
I was going to say, at 2020, Combine came out in 2019 because I was at WWDC for that one, the same year that Swift UI came out. And I remember iOS 14 would have been.
Tim, when Swift UI came out. Oh, no, that's when Swift came out. Sorry.
Yeah. And I was there for that too, by the way.
Yeah. So was I.
But in 2019, but I remember specifically that iOS 14 was the OS that was going to be shipping and Combine supports iOS 13. So that was like, I wonder if there's something weird, something significant about iOS 13 that they could go back that far in this case, right? Maybe some architecture or something that they used.
When was the 64-bit changeover? Is that the limiting factor for how possibly how far back it could go?
I don't know. iOS 64-bit. We'll ask Mr. Google.
Not asking ChatGPT.
Updating your app from 32-bit to 64-bit says in iOS 11 and later, apps use the 64-bit architecture.
Okay, so it's even longer than that. Okay.
Yeah. Somebody was telling me something the other day that only runs on. Today it was different thing. It was something that only runs on Fontographer only runs on 32-bit, but it's still available. So, but it won't run on the 64-bit Mac. Cool. All right. Well, the other thing that I posted in here that was going to be brought up was that I think are we at Swift 5.9 already? I think so, right? I
barely remember what iOS version we're on these days.
Well, it's 17.
It's challenging. It's a side note here that, like, since Swift has been decoupled from the Apple events themselves, I honestly lose a little bit of, like, wait, so what's in preview in the open source world? You know, try your tool chain preview versus what is actually shipping. So I'm like Mark. I'm like, yeah, that's a good question. What is available? What is the current latest and greatest?
Well, you know why it's kind of, first of all, this weekend we changed the clocks back. So daylight savings time is the first confusion. No, that's not the real confusion. I've been working in Vision OS for the last month, right? So I'm still in beta. You know what I mean? Like, even though 17 is now shipping, right? So 5.9 is shipping, but this is new debugging improvements in Swift 5.9. Like apparently faster variables with P and PO. I do a lot of PO. I don't know. I don't often use P when I'm debugging on the LLDB debugger. Mark, maybe you can help me out on that one.
is more general.
But you get more information back from the debugger when you, because of these improvements. So you get, instead of sort of cryptic, you know, memory addresses and stuff like that, you get like a proper, like, or and maybe like in this example you're talking about, you would normally get back an int. Now you're getting back that it's my app delegate that's throwing this thing out and so on and so forth. I don't know if you guys had a chance to scan this article.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't really noticed this, but I'm actually still using Xcode 14 for most of the time for work stuff. So that's why I haven't noticed it. But yeah, this would be good. I mean, you know, debugging LLDB for Swift, as everybody knows, has been problematic for as long as it's been Swift. So anything they can do to fix it and improve it is greatly appreciated.
What's the difference in P? I've used PO all the time to basically get the pointer object, right? What's P do?
Oh, what's the difference? P is more general. So PO is actually print object, right? Print so it only object, worked yeah. with objects. And if you want to do more general things, you'd use P. But I don't actually even know if that's still true because the lines have been blurred and things have changed so much. Yeah.
I mean, this one is also kind of a nice quality of life one where reading the implementation, the P and PO command aliases redefined to the new DWIM or DWIM print command, which means it is an acronym for do what I mean. You know what I want here. I probably don't want the address.
Yeah.
Probably want to see what is this object. Oh, did I make a mistake? And it's actually an integer. Show the integer. It's a human readable, understandable format.
Right.
Using the tooling that is available to the whole machinery, especially in a strongly typed language like Swift, it's good. This is quality stuff.
Cool. All right. And we assembled here tonight to talk about the Apple event that happened yesterday. But before we do that, I don't know if you guys saw that you obviously saw the speech, keynote, or whatever you want to call it, all filmed in low light modes and things like that with flyovers and everything like that. So I don't know if you saw this clip here, but Apple posted this yesterday saying that the scary event, as I'm calling it, scary fast event, was also shot on an iPhone 15 using the USB-C port to, you know, transfer the image in real time. So it's cool. Like they attached it to a top of a... Obviously, they had their proper movie rigs, and they just replaced the, you know, whatever high-tech camera they would have used with a rig holding an iPhone 15. To get all those amazing shots that they did. And, you know, they go on about, you know, how it's amazing and great video and stuff. But I don't know if you, just an interesting little piece here on the making of those shots that we saw yesterday in the event.
It definitely had a style, right? It was cool to see behind the scenes. I did see some people online poo-pooing like, well, you know, it's got all this other gear. I was like, yeah, they didn't say the entire thing was produced from an iPhone. They said it was shot on iPhone.
Right.
You know,
on a Mac.
Like what? They were going to turn on the flashlight or torch, if you prefer that word, for your phone and just have Tim Cook run around like he's at a campfire telling scary stories. Like, I mean, let's be serious here. Like, it's not meant to be... you know, this entire thing was done with, like, you know, the $1,100 it costs for the 15 Pro. It's meant to be like, look how powerful this thing is that we can even do this sort of fancy pants showing off of what it can do. Mm-hmm. People should take it for that. I mean, I thought it looked good. Obviously, well lit. That was one of the things behind the scenes that was pretty interesting to me, is just seeing the light boxes that they had filled in and all the stuff.
Yeah, so getting to the event, it was a pretty interesting, pretty well shot, you know, event. I think one of the funnier criticisms I saw of the event was that probably could have been an email.
Right? Yeah, it was pretty short,
a big part of it,
and very incremental, I would say.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, no surprise. I think everybody kind of anticipated that. Obviously, since the logo morphed into a Mac, that it was going to be a Mac event of some type, and as we know, the laptops, the MacBook Pros, are due for a refresh, or if not, maybe, I don't know if this is an annual refresh now that we're at that rate, but so we got three chips. We got the M3, which is kind of the entry level. We got the Pro, and we got the Max, and the Max obviously has more stuff, but no Ultra Max, which somebody pointed out as well. But so a bunch of like tech talk kind of stuff, like dynamic caching for the GPU. I didn't catch much more detail than that, but I'm not sure what mesh shading was. I forget what that is too. But anyway, but I mean, from a, they were comparing it to the original M1. They were saying that the performance cores are 30% faster than the M1s. Interesting, when you looked at the charts, we've talked about these charts that Apple shows in the past. They're talking performance per watt now. I don't think they actually put a number to, I think it was one of your criticisms, Mark, that they didn't really sort of show what was on the graph on the X and Y chart, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of performance, but they're now calling it performance per watt. Faster neural engines. Interesting, and from an architecture point of view, and this is basically how the chips are mapped out, right, Mark? That the M3 can go to 24 megabytes, the M3 Pro can go to 36 megabytes, gigabytes? And the Mac can go, sorry, gigabytes, yes, thank you. I was talking about old Macs this morning. And the Macs can go to 128 gigabytes of RAM, which is phenomenal, amazing. So, yeah, cool. And then, of course, they introduced a new 14-inch, which is just an iteration with this M3. No, nothing changes on the ports and that kind of stuff. I think they increased the nits, if I'm not mistaken, on the screen. Yeah, they went to 20% brighter at 600 nits. XDR, you know, the Leica Retina XDR display still. That one, obviously, if you put a Mac in it, can go to 128 gigs. And has enough horsepower to drive 4 external high-res monitors. 22 hours of battery life, if you believe that. And they're comparing it to the Intel Max, 11% faster. I don't know why they would even bring that number up.
Yeah, that one was a little bit funny because there hasn't been an Intel. Well, I guess the Mac Pro was still an Intel Mac up until recently. But okay, all right. If they're saying it's 11 times faster than the last Intel Mac Pro, that's a pretty cool statistic. Because the Mac Pro mm-hmm. was the workhorse server machine for a long time.
Are they saying Mac Pro?
They said, the best Intel Mac, right? That would be Mac Pro.
That would be the Pro. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this might come up. It's not a Mac Pro, but this very machine that I am using, my personal device, is a 16-inch 2019 MacBook Pro. I believe the, might be one of the final. It is one of the later Intel cores. It's a 2.6 gigahertz, 6-core Intel Core i7. And, you know, if you're comparing it to that, I think for me, I'm probably going to ride this particular device into the ground, where in the ground means when it, you know, destroys itself, or I accidentally destroy it, whenever macOS drops it from support. Mm-hmm. So I've been watching year after year as that dividing line has been getting closer and closer. I think they're up to 2017, 2018 that they dropped off. So it's coming very soon.
And then maybe you'll be able to trade it for somebody's old $17,000 gold Apple Watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm looking at the store right now. It looks like the MacBook Pro 13 is gone, now that you mention it. I thought there was an Intel configuration of the 13 Pro.
Well, they retired the 13 Pro a while ago, right? They moved to the 14.
No, Pro. They still had the I thought they still had the one with the track part.
Was that a Pro or was that a non-Pro?
Yeah, no, it was a Pro. It was 13 Pro. Oh, sorry, a MacBook. Yeah, no, 13.
Not
Pro
an Air.
Gone.
Interesting. Yeah, people were talking about the fact that the entry level MacBook Pro ditches the Touch Bar, according to The Verge. I remember them saying that. So if you're okay,
there was an M2. You could get an. I'm pretty sure of this. I'll have to check the facts now, but I'm pretty sure there was an M2 MacBook Pro with touch bar that you can still got. Touch bar. They all have track bars.
Maybe I'll throw this in the show notes. The device replaces talking about the 14-inch MacBook Pro that just got announced with M3. The device replaces the 13-inch MacBook Pro with an M2 chip that Apple released last year and offers performances up to 60% faster.
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting one of these. It would probably be the 16, I would think, because I haven't bought a new machine for myself since I still have an M1. When I did that strategy of I'll get the M1 mini and wait until they come out with a MacBook and then I'll get the MacBook, and I never got the MacBook, and basically because I didn't need it, because you know I always had good machines from work and everything, so I just use my home machine for email and all that kind of stuff, so I don't really need a high power.
Are you
machine.
Fully remote still, or do you go into the office
still.
Occasionally?
Yep.
Yep. Really? Is there an office nearby you?
It's in San Francisco, which is pretty far away. Yeah. If I go during normal work hours, it's like an hour and a half door to door, pretty far. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't do it very often.
I also got in some stats here, because I figured folks might be thinking about like who's this for. I know I totally understand, like many of you all listening on the show, that it would be nice to see Apple comparing more with the M2 of like how big of a jump is this. And they talked a little bit, but mostly about differences from M1 as well as differences from Intel. So I looked at my, I happened this week to be replacing my work laptop. So the old MacBook Pro was a 15-inch 2019 MacBook Pro with 500 gigs of storage, which is getting replaced with a 16-inch 2021 MacBook Pro with Apple M1 Pro, and I did not get the storage. I think it's a terabyte, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's kind of more in line with the cycles that Apple is sort of leaning into here, right? It's not throw away last year's M2, now you get M3, next year throw away the M3, get the M4. Certainly there's people who do that, but it's really more of these extended laptop replacement cycles that people are being sold to, I think. I think that's the audience here.
And you can even see that in, well, they actually sort of explicitly called that out, that these are built to last forever, right? Or something like that. They said something like that when they were talking about the you know, that they're made of aluminum and all of that. That wasn't a throwaway line, right? They wouldn't have put that in because nothing is a throwaway line in these things, right? So that was definitely a message they wanted to get across. But you can also see that in the features, right? There's nothing new in terms of features in any of these things. It's just a better version of what we've had for a while. Yeah. Yeah. Which, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not like they're not going for the iPhone approach where, you know, look at all the gee whiz new things. You have to have this new phone for sure.
Yeah. Well, there is one thing though, the new color, the new space black color they introduced is only available on the Pro model. So if you get the regular M3 or the M3, it's only available on the Max model. I wrote that down wrong.
It's only available on the Max. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, if you go to the site and check out the picker up Mac. Yeah, I looked at this yesterday and I was surprised. Oh, sorry, there is a MacBook. Oh, it's MacBook Air 13. I thought it was a Mac iMac. I got excited for a second. I thought maybe it was a 13-inch Pro. On the 14-inch, if you want the black color, you have to go to the M3 Pro. Oh, sorry, M3 Pro.
Right.
No, it is Pro.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so the Max is only on the 16? Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, the black is available on all of the 16 models. No, sorry, they're all Pros. The 16 is all M3 Pro, M3 Pro, and M3 Max are the three configs, and then the 14 is M3, two M3s, and then one M3 Pro. So, yeah, Pro and higher to get the black color. But I can always go to the hardware store and get some trim-clad black paint and paint.
Little aftermarket adjustment, yeah.
That's scary. That's scary, Mac.
This color, I definitely want to see it in person. I think the closest I'd seen was the IMAX that were also space gray or space black or something similar.
I think it's like the iPhone 7 was black. Remember it had that black color?
Yeah, they had the jet black? That was like that. And I'm reminded...
It's great for fingerprints.
Yeah, well, they talked about the anodization process that's supposed to reduce that. I think...
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which... is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
the last time I remember seeing a MacBook Pro that, or a Apple laptop that looked like this, was a coworker of mine back in like 2006 to 2008.
Yeah, they did have a black Mac at one point. The Duo, was it Intel Duo or something like that? They had a white one and a black one.
It was a very sleek device. I was I was impressed, and I was at the time a Windows PC guy, so that's why I can't name what the device was, other than it was definitely an Apple product. I'm not even sure if it was a MacBook.
Yeah, no, there was a I don't know if it was the first Intel Duo, but there was a Duo 2 or something like that chip, Core 2 Duo, and the low end one was white, and you had the more expensive model you could get in black.
Yeah,
yeah. One of my customers had it. I was envious of that Mac.
Had they started the MacBook moniker, they'd switched away from PowerBook and
Yeah. Okay, but it wasn't. It was before they started doing the one where they mill them. You know, like they get block of plastic and mill them out. This was before that.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
like a molded plastic. It looked pretty cool.
Yeah, there was a time when not all the MacBooks were this metallic color, right? That was a new thing at one time when they came out with that space gray color, or even before the space gray.
Yeah.
What were they like before? I don't even remember.
Well, remember that one small Mac that they had? The little, wasn't a mini, but it was like a little 12-inch Mac. That was the sort of the first one they went to color, like color, anodizing the color of the aluminum on them.
Hmm.
What was that thing called?
I don't know.
It only had one USB port. You remember that one, Jaime? Here, let's go to the low-end Mac. They'll know.
I think color-wise, when they machined them out of one piece of aluminium, as I recall, they looked more like actual silver, whereas what they look like now is more like tungsten in color. It's a much deeper, darker sort of metallic color.
Oh, they actually, I'm looking at some pictures. They had the old ones that looked like a sort of like a clamshell with the colors, orange and blue.
Mm, yeah, with the iMac style like of the design.
Yeah.
It had a bad nickname. iMac purse or iPurse or something like that. Yeah, I found it here. 13-inch MacBook from looks like 2006. That's about right where you're saying, honey, right?
Yeah, 2006. Yeah, 2008
was when they 2008 was when they started doing the aluminum unibody.
You can get a vintage Apple Macintosh PowerBook 1400C laptop for $65 on eBay. Oh, wait a minute.
$65.
There's one for $9.99.
which one
vintage
is that?
Apple Mac PowerBook 1400 series laptop. It costs $9.99 plus $14 shipping.
I have four of those G3 PowerBooks, and I still have my titanium one, the 1-inch thin, as Job said. Anyway, so yeah, $15.99 will get you is the entry point for the 14-inch, and $24.99 is the entry point for the 16-inch. So that's $24.99 US dollars USD.
Wow, there's also a PowerBook 170 on eBay. Running system 7.5.5, or take a guess how much it costs.
I don't know. PowerBook you're looking for?
PowerBook 170. Mm. Really old one.
Yeah, no, I think I had a 140. That's the very first one, right? First PowerBook?
Maybe. Anyway, somebody's asking $12,000 for this thing.
What's the deal with it?
I don't know.
Does it have the box and the manuals and everything like that? That's crazy.
And then right underneath it, there's somebody's got a 145, which is, I guess, even older, for $200.
Somebody's got the box only to 166 Canadian, so 150, I guess.
Okay, here's a PowerBook Duo 230. That's the one you were talking about, right?
Oh, you know why that $17,000 one, Mark? It's because it's the multicolored one.
It is multicolored.
The plastic. That was a rare. That was a rare one that they did. That is a rare one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got kind of a yellow hinge, and it's got a red bumper.
So the 170, so there was the 100, the 140, and the 170. They were the first three PowerBooks back in 93, I think. Because I had the 140. Then I had the, I don't know if you remember, the first color screen one. The screen was so small that the plastic bezel came in on the sides. The 180. It's called the 180C. I had that one.
Oh, wow. It says only 500 of these units were produced and put into mass production in the early to mid 1990s.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. A bit too much. Yeah. The trick is the batteries. The batteries in these things are probably no good. I think they're nickel cadmium back in the day. Hmm. Anyway. Carrying on with the event, we also got the 24-inch iMac with M3,
mm-hmm.
right? 2.5% faster than an M1 iMac and 4 times faster than a 20-inch iMac. I didn't know they had, I guess they don't have a 20-inch iMac. I haven't seen one of them.
2,500%, right? You said 2.5%.
Is it 2,500?
Actually, yeah, 2.5 times.
They said 2.5 times faster.
Right, but you said 2.5% faster.
Oh, okay. 2.5 times faster.
Yeah, which is 250%.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Is that?
250%, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Right, it's math. $12.99 for this puppy. They didn't have a black one, though. Like, what is up with that?
It's going to be for the Pro version.
Yeah.
They don't have an iMac Pro.
There hasn't
anymore.
Been an iMac.
Well, yet.
For a while, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's going to happen next year. We're going to be like, oh, look, it's in space black to go along with my MacBook Pro. The colors there, right? Green, yellow, orange, purple, blue, silver, and pink in this year of Barbenheimer. I'm going to guess that that the pink.
Well, you know, they call that red, but you're right. The front is actually pink, right? Because Carol would like red, anything red, Carol, like the red phones, the red. You know, we have a red Kodak DSLR and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, this Mac is too pink for her. The front bezel, right? The back's a nice red color, but the front, I don't know, they're all pastel-y, right? Not for me.
Yeah, they could go a little deeper on the purple, that's for sure. That's a long-standing complaint that I've had.
Mm-hmm. So, going around the table, Mark, you sound like you might be in the market for one of these guys.
I may be. I would probably get the 16-inch Pro, is my guess.
Jaime?
I'm not in the market because I'll be riding this Intel one until it sees the end of macOS or poops out, whichever comes first.
You mean the one you own currently?
Yeah. So I don't have a choice for work, except for my personal device. But if I was in the market, I'd have a really tough time deciding because normally I would go with the 16, but I feel like they've trimmed enough away from the physical size of the 14s, where it's darn near all screen, that between that and the 16, I'm like, man, it's all basically all screen now. Mm-hmm. How much savings am I really getting in terms of weight and portability? I might just consider the...
Well, do you know from a footprint point of view, the 14 is not that much bigger than a 13, like because they've slightly expanded it, but because you said that, like you said, the bezel's gone out further, there's no longer a quarter inch all the way around, they're actually, the actual unit itself is smaller than you would think, right?
Yeah, and likewise, the 16 will be smaller than I would think too, so I might have to see these in person.
So the question is, do you need the extra performance of the 16 versus the 14?
I don't think I need the perf like today, but from a, well, it would let me ride that one until they're not even using M chips anymore. It's a T chip now. It's X chip, you know, something like that. I do definitely advise for folks to, you know, get the terabyte SSD, you know, at the very least. You're going to be hurting yourself if you get less space, even with fancy cloud and stuff. And I also think, you know, maxing out what you can on your RAM is going to be a real nice.
Yeah, you should RAM for sure. Yeah.
Do you really need that large hard drive or quote hard drive anymore? Because
I would say a terabyte, but not 2 terabytes. I bought a 2 terabyte on my Intel, and I've always regretted it because like a lot of data to lose. But I'm okay with a 1 terabyte. Like I used to always have to, because I was doing the podcast all the time, I always had large files on my computer. And I was all into with the 512. I was constantly running out of space. So 1 terabyte, I think, is a comfortable size. I would 100% like whatever the RAM, get as much RAM as you can afford. Sure. I can tell you right now, because I'm doing a lot of Vision OS stuff on my Mac, the stimulators and stuff like that, and maybe it's because it's beta, but it constantly overruns the RAM and you know, space and stuff like that. So I'm constantly fighting, if I work for a long period of time, I find that the Mac gets really, really dumb and starts complaining about disk space and running out of system memory and stuff like that. And I have 16 gigabytes, which I thought would have been fine, right? But the other thing too, Jaime, I don't know if you're not planning on doing Vision OS, you're fine, but because the Vision OS, as of Xcode 15.1, you can't do Vision OS development. You can write the code, but you can't preview it or run it on a simulator on anything but Apple Silicon. So it won't run on Intel.
I still don't understand how that would happen in a patch release or a point release. I forget which one it was.
15.1? Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like...
It was pretty hard to... Like, I have my Intel Mac upstairs. I occasionally would run stuff on it. It was getting really hard to run Vision OS on there.
And you think that was a late-breaking... like product management change, or as I'm proposing here, 50-50 shot that it was a release manager. Oopsie.
Yeah, it could be.
Forgot
could
to
be,
check the box that says, you know, universal build when they were outputting these things.
Maybe they didn't use Swift.
Or maybe they just decided it was such a dog to run that, you know, they didn't want that hassle. Yeah, they just turned it off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were bugs. People were complaining about who run on Intel Max full time. They were complaining that they were having trouble with the simulator. I wasn't, you know, obviously. And so when they said that, I tried upstairs, but just the other day, like last week, I downloaded 15.1 and then I went to install it and it won't even install the Vision OS simulator. It just says, nope, need an Apple Silicon for this. So they may be drawing a line in the sand is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No man shall pop. Yeah.
But I mean, if you know, honestly, if you're serious about developing for this platform, you're going to need the performance. I mean, if you're doing anything real, of course. Yeah.
So I'm not in a cash positive position right now, mm-hmm. but if I would probably get the 14 inch pro for sure. Cause I don't really like the 16 inch size, but like physical size, but yeah, for me, if I'm going to replace my current, I have the M1 here, that was I did the same thing Mark did. I just got one early days to try it out, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Right. So,
and it's still going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's, you know, it's funny how you get used to the, like, after a while, and things start, they appear to slow down, but they're not really, they're still much faster. I'm glad I have the Intel to compare it to, but, like, you know, opening things like Photoshop and stuff like that used to be super fast. And as the binaries get bigger and stronger and faster and whatever, seems to make a difference, right? So what do you think about, Mark, what do you think about the difference between, like, you know, the core size of the GPU and the neural engine size? Because between the four M3, M3 Pro and the M3 Max, the cores jump quite a bit, right? Like the entry level one is 10 core GPU and then all the way to 30 core GPU on the Max.
Okay. So if you're just, you know, if you're just running normal, doing word processing or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, it's not going to make any difference at all. It's all for graphics. And so if you're doing like really heavy gaming, then all that stuff you were talking about, like that mesh shading and stuff like that, that just means that they do, you know, the way all these Unity and stuff or anything based on metal, I mean, really what it's doing is it's drawing a bunch of triangles, right? And then there's a shader is kind of a program that says for the triangle at this point, you know, what color should it be? And if you can do that all in hardware, rather than doing it on the CPU and software, it can be way faster. And if you have more cores, you can say, okay, this part of the screen over here on the left, and that part of the screen over there on the right, and this part of the screen on the bottom, they're not really interacting with each other. So I could just take a chunk of the stuff that I need to render and throw it over to one core, and then another stuff over a different core, and then different area over another core, and just do it all at the same time. And so the more cores that you have, the more things you can do in parallel, this little parallel processing thing. And so the faster it's going to be. But, you know, if you're, you know, doing Xcode development and you're compiling, I still don't think Xcode is really optimized for multi-cores at this, after all this time, because the builds still take a long time. So I don't think you're going to see any. So unless you're doing graphically intensive or like training machine learning models, you know, where you can also distribute that in massively parallel, If you're not doing that kind of stuff, then it's not going to help you that much. Now, if you really are doing heavy duty 3D stuff for the Vision Pro, then yeah, it actually could help you.
Yeah. Well, so from a configuration point of view, for those who are still driving at home, an M3 can go from 16 gigabytes to 24 gigabytes or 1 terabyte to 2 terabyte. The M3 Pro and M3 Max start around 36 gigabytes and can go all the way up to 128 gigabytes on the Max. And then for disks SSD sizes, you have 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, and 4 terabyte SSDs. And then there's an 8 terabyte SSD you can get in the Mac, in the M3 Max. So quite a range of configurations between the on the Pro and Max side.
Yeah, definitely. I would go for more memory before more cores, personally.
Yeah.
Because the more memory you have, the more programs you can have open, and the more things you can keep running at the same time. The more cores you have, like I said, it's just graphics. It's purely just graphics, or something like I said, training a machine learning model where you need a little parallel processing. But you're not doing that every day, most people.
What do you think about the HDMI port? I mean, I've the Thunderbolt 4 ports, there's only two of them, and you lose one of the USB-C ports because of the HDMI output.
Yeah, if you have a nice monitor, it's probably good. Otherwise, it's a kind of a waste.
What, to have the HDMI? No, cool device. And like I said, I'm not in a cash flow positive position right now, but because I'm sort of in the same cool thought. I need to get to the next chip, and I wanted to wait for the M3 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the point in time. So I'd probably go with a Pro, but again, like I said, of probably a 14-inch.
I thought you were a fan of the Airs. I guess there's not a new Air.
I am, but I don't like the new Air. I mean, the they've taken the speakers away from the top panel. I mean, I definitely wouldn't get a 15-inch Air.
What do you need speakers for? You wear headphones all the time. Seriously.
Not all the time. No, I don't use them. I don't use headphones. I only use them when I'm recording. I don't know. I guess I should go back and look at the Airs, actually, now you say that. But that MacBook Air hasn't... Well, I guess I'll wait for them to get bumped up to the M3.
Right? Yeah. I actually think that's a good business decision to remove speakers from something like the Air, because that really is meant to be a traveler's machine. And when you're sitting on a plane or in an office somewhere for a meeting, you don't want the thing making noise, right? You wear headphones if you have to listen to something. Yeah.
I don't think that they took the speakers away. They took them off the...
Oh, I don't know. Did they not? Oh, I assumed it was. I was going by what you were saying.
Yeah, no, I'm just checking right now. But because there are two configurations of Airs. You can still get the M1, which is what I have now, and you can get an M2 chip. There's a 15-inch and a 13-inch size here. Doesn't say anything about speakers. Three-way mic. Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. It's got a three-way mic array and a four-speaker sound system. So it's got the... with spatial audio. Ooh.
All right. Then stop your complaining.
It does have them, but... Yeah. I guess if I spill my orange juice, they won't go into the speakers, right? Yep. What that means.
They should make it like the Apple Watch, where you can take it in the water, and then it shakes out from the speakers to clear
it
things.
Spits it out, yeah. Yeah. Makes that little sport noise and spits out.
So the Mac event, the M3 event, was a very breezy 30 minutes at 5 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, October 30th. I believe this was well chosen because, remember, Apple has the MLS
sport thing?
Pass. I forget what they call the season pass thing. We see every game, and the Seattle Sounders FC were set to play FC Dallas in the first game of their three-game series in the playoffs. So I'm going to assume that was not a coincidence to be like, all right, we got to make sure there's a really tight thing that can fit into this exact time slot. Kind of an unusual one, right? It's I guess it makes sense that it would be at night, because they were going with the dark mode, scary kind of themed Halloween vaguely. I'm guessing that made a really interesting set of choices for how do we make sure we wrap this up so that it doesn't bleed into the money-making MLS season pass stuff.
I think also they couldn't have done a Tuesday one because of the whole Halloween thing, right?
It would have been awkward to do it on October 31st as a Tuesday. Yeah. a week earlier, maybe a week later, maybe too late. You know, you start going into the holiday season and shopping and everything.
Well, I guess they had to get it out. They had to get the orders out before Black Friday too, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure what the logic is. Why? I mean, again, like I said at the top of the show, this could have been an email.
Yeah. Right? Maybe they did it in the evening because it was short. It would be a little less of a hassle for, well, people were like coming. I guess nobody was coming out to Apple for this one. There was no live component.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
And it was also at the end of the day, like why 5 p.m.? Like, I guess stop interrupting workday maybe?
Yeah.
Like if you were working in, like, I think Greg, when he was working at, he may still do a commute, right? No, he's in LA now, right? Never mind. But he was living in San Francisco. He used to commute to Apple, right? Wouldn't you be on the bus back to San Francisco at 5?
On the train.
You were heading back up?
Well, I guess they do have buses too, don't they? Yeah.
It's not exactly sunset, because now sunset, at least in the Pacific Northwest, is coming out around almost 6 o'clock. I'm going to guess in California, it's roughly the same, maybe a difference of 20 minutes.
Roughly,
If you're going to have an event that is around darkness and scary, you know, vaguely Halloween in the season theme, you know that the rest of the country, minus, of course, Alaska and Hawaii, are already in the darkness, right? Certainly the East Coast is, for sure. And again, I think they didn't want to go into the 5:45 p.m. start time of the MLS match. I think it was a little bit of a schedule Tetris here.
All right, let's move on to our picks. I got a couple here. I was working on a new app or something. I forget what I was doing. Oh, no, I was iterating a map. I'm working on a new app. I forgot. And so I wanted to do the whole icon thing. And you still can't, I don't know why you can't support vector icons, like why you couldn't just make a 1024 vector and just pop it in and just use it universally, but you still have to make all those ridiculous icon sizes. And so this online site called appicon.co, you basically drag your 1024 icon in there and it automatically creates sizes for all of the things and gives you back an asset catalog that you then just drag into your Xcode and presto changeo, you're done. So that's super nice.
You can use PDFs, can't you? Or is that
for the app icon?
Oh, that's no, only for in an asset. App icons are in an asset catalog too, but maybe for the icons they still have to be the custom sizes. Yeah, I don't know.
And there's a gazillion of them now because there's like iMessages and there's little emoji guys and it's like there's like 27,000 of them or whatever. It's ridiculous. But anyway, you just do this. Just drop your icon over there. I mean, from a designer point of view, there is an argument about whether the 24.1 should be specifically designed, but from my point of view, they look fine to me. Mm-hmm. I would approve them. As an art director, I would approve. My second pick is something I've talked about on Spotcast. I stumbled across this at a talk, I think NS Spain. Jordi Bruin was demonstrating some of his techniques for building apps. He iterates really quickly, 2 days on an idea, or 2 hours on an idea, 2 days on the prototyping, and then 2 weeks to get it out the door kind of thing. And that's sort of his model for building apps. But he worked collaboratively with another guy to come up with, because I do the podcast, one of the things I want to do, people ask me for, is to create a transcript of the show. So with his app called Mac Whisper, I can drag in the MP3 and it goes through and it uses machine learning and like a sort of ChatGPT kind of thing and creates a transcript for me. And then I just have to edit a few words that it might get wrong and then... Yeah, like in maybe 20 minutes or whatever, it's done in the background. I kind of just pop it in there, go do other stuff and come back and it's finished. And it's basically, I think I paid $30 to him for this thing on Gumroad. Yeah. So check out Mac Whisper if you're interested in some of the cool things you can do with text speech or speech to text. And then over to Jaime.
Yeah. Speaking of new apps, remember Threads being new? It's new enough that people are talking about this from Meta or Instagram, if you prefer, about how they built the app for iOS. So you want to go through this, they chose some interesting choices. They didn't start completely from scratch because Instagram, You know, you kind of squint at it. It more or less does what you would want to do, or so you would think. So they say, well, what if we harness a lot of that stuff? And they went a very interesting route. So rather than starting clean sheet and then pulling in pieces that they need, they kind of went the opposite direction, where their initial first build was, let's just replace the application delegate. I was like, what? I was like, wow. Okay, interesting. So it's initially, you know, before shipping, just to be clear here, they start with like, well, let's just put a new app delegate and just hydrate stuff and see what it does. And it's like, okay, what if you had Instagram, but it like really didn't have pictures? Okay, well, kind of looking close, kind of looks like a, you know, a Twitter-ish kind of clone. And then they go a little deeper and say, okay, well, part of the problem is the main Instagram app continues to move, and engineers there might break stuff unintentionally because they're not aware of how this other side team is using things. So they had to deal with that and try to wrap things around so they like abstract it a bit. And then they say, okay, well, it's looking mostly pretty close. And they say, well, unfortunately, you know, Instagram's sort of main claim to fame is the photos, right? And so when you look at a sort of layout of how things are, everything is sort of like a, almost like it could all be done in table view, to be honest, right? Because it's just a bunch of different little rows of like, this is the row that has your profile picture. This is the row that has the actual photo. This is the row that has the interaction things, and then some rows and of like, what day did this occur? What's the comments, etc. But when you remove a bunch of those things to make it a little bit more like a Twitter clone, it's like, well, I kind of not making all that great use of space, right? It feels a little too filled with white space. So it's okay, well, what if we redesign this so that we squeeze these things a little bit tighter and get a little bit tighter data density? And I know this is an audio only medium, but I was aghast to see one of their choices where it was like, okay, so what we had to do is deal with the fact that these are going to be overlapping icons and we avatars, and we end up using some offsets magic to say, okay, in Instagram, this would have been by default the profile picture, so only show it for the first one, but don't show it for every other cell. And it gets a little hacky, which is weird. You know what? I can't actually find them. Somebody must have called them out on it. It's literally not the same article that I saw before.
What's that?
I'm looking for the image where they show the cells lining up, and they line up, you know, like bananas sort of way.
Oh, I think I see that.
Oh, yeah. Do you? Yeah. Where there's like three profile pictures in a row?
Yeah. It's right under, there's a what looks like a picture of a painting of a woman sitting on a chair. Right below.
Oh, yes. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, there we go. Where you see like the profile picture of the guy that's like Tomer Bar, and then a profile picture on the row that should be where the, you know, the favoriting, the reposting, and then another one for like the replying stuff, and it gets really,
It is kind of weird.
Kudos to them to reuse what they had so they didn't have to start from scratch, and so they could get an MVP out there. But I thought it was kind of a fascinating read to see.
Yeah, you would think, you know, if they had the thing architected right, it would be very easy to just use the same baseline data structure with a different view. So all they need is a new view, new set of views, and that all goes away. All these problems go away, you would think. But anyway, I don't know.
Cool. Still built on IGListKit. That's cool. Speaking of follow-up. Well, I guess that's it. So until next time, Mark, if people can get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I guess markr@smopsoft.com. I don't use that email address that often these days, but it's still alive.
No, yeah. Obviously no. Yeah. And how many people get in touch with you? Where they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @devofthehair.
There is no more Twitter, is there?
This is one of those challenging things. When somebody has a terrible rebranding, the old brand that people know tends to be the one that's used. And I don't want to do the news reporter like X, comma, formerly known as Twitter, comma, yeah. Because it sounds terrible. It looks terrible in text. It's even worse in audio. But yeah, for folks who are wondering, I will definitely be one of the folks who is like Captain Jack Sparrow waltzing off of the top of the mast as the ship goes underneath the water, and I'm just walk onto the dock.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we talked about this on the podcast last week, I think. It's almost like I'm Dev with Hair on Twitter. It's almost like his sign off, so we can't change it. It's been trademarked.
Nobody has taken the lead, which is interesting. As much as Twitter has fallen from grace, Threads, mm-hmm. that we talked about today, we didn't mention Mastodon, we didn't mention Blue Sky, and
but we will in a minute.
I mean, yeah. A handful of others. Nobody has really taken the crown. It's really been more of a unbundling of people, where as funny as it will be, and I'm sure Mark will love this one, as a huge connoisseur of social media, LinkedIn is my new Twitter. I'm increasing for like a professional one. The more casual side is still kind of limping along over on Twitter.
Right. My name is Timitra, TimMitra, on the Twitter machine, on Instagram, on Threads, on Blue Sky, and on Mastodon. So that's where you'll find me. So until next time, see you in the future.
Bye.
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 This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. Please leave a comment on the website, and if you can, please write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.